everyone. Well, welcome to Stutter Talk, episode 586 for July 21st, 2016. This is the Two Peters edition because we have Marcus Peters on the line in Dallas, Texas, and I'm Peter Reitzes. Hey, Marcus.
Hi, Peter.
So great to have you on air. You know, this episode almost didn't happen because there's a gas leak in my neighborhood and there was a police roadblock and they just moved the roadblock to the left of my house. So my house is the very first house in the safe zone. So this was meant to happen, my friend.
Sounds good.
Marcus Peters is a person who stutters in Dallas, Texas, an information systems analyst, and a member of the Dallas National Stuttering Association chapter. I think that's a famous chapter. I've been hearing about that chapter since I first started in self-help. You got a lot of good folks in Texas. Marcus Peters holds a degree in economics from the University of Maryland and a master's in business administration from the University of Texas at Dallas. This is a Roisin McManus curated episode. I say that because I reached out to Roisin and I said, hey, let's get some fresh blood on Stutter Talk. And you were one of the first names she mentioned. So hat tip to Roisin. And let's get started. So you just attended your first National Stuttering Association conference in Atlanta, Georgia. You're 25 years old. What was that conference like for you?
Oh, man, that conference was an unbelievably inspiring and motivating milestone that I've had in my life. I mean, you know, from the moment I walked in the door, I honestly felt at home. You know, there was this kind of vibe there that, you know, time pressure is thrown out the window. You can say exactly what you want to say when you want. And I kid you not, I've said this several times, within the first few hours of being there, I sat down, went out to dinner with some folks I met there. And even though I had only known them for a few hours, it felt like I had known those guys for 10 years. So just an unbelievably, great opportunity.
It's like coming home to family that you didn't know you had. Is that a fair way to say it?
I would say so.
Yeah. So I know that you've worked with the famous Vivian Siskin in Maryland. She's a great speech language pathologist. You have a great chapter there in Dallas, Texas. How did you get to your first National Stuttering Association conference?
Yeah, so this conference in July of 2016 was actually my first conference. You know, Vivian might give me a hard time after this talk, but she actually asked me right after I started with her my sophomore year at the University of Maryland, you know, if I'd want to go to a conference. And I declined at the time. And, you know, not going to those conferences that were in Baltimore and DC, you know, is something that I wish I would have done. But hey, you know, better late than never.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go until you're ready. And I was just at the Friends Conference in North Carolina last summer, which was only 30 minutes from my home. And I saw a family there, and I had worked with the daughter years ago in Brooklyn. And the mom kind of sheepishly came up to me and she said, I know you've been trying to get us here for years. And I wish we should have listened to you. And I said, no, it's not about that. You weren't ready 8 years ago and you're ready now. So however you get there is great. Have you had any of those crashing like moments where you feel so strong and confident at a big conference and then you come home and you start to feel that stuttering support slip away a little bit? Have you had any of that?
I don't think I've had any of that. I think for me, after I left the community that I had at the University of Maryland in group therapy, I really wasn't involved in self-help, wasn't in the stuttering community for about 2 years' time. So I think because of that, I didn't identify as much as I'd like to as a person who stutters. And I think a few of the avoidance behaviors that I had started to kind of creep back in, and that was when it was time that I made a decision to get back involved.
Yeah, it's really easy to backslide sometimes. So Roisin shared with me that you gave a very thoughtful open mic about the opportunity to bring ideas that are generated at the National Stuttering Association Conference back to our communities, especially to those folks who can't afford to pay for therapy or can't afford to attend a self-help convention. Can you share with us what your ideas were on these matters?
Yeah. So one of the goals that I had at the NSA was to step out and to challenge myself in any way that I would see as an opportunity. And the open mic that we had at the end of the conference was that opportunity. There were several hundred people in the room, and I got up maybe like 30 minutes in and pretty much just took some time to share what was on my heart. And, you know, I kind of talked about how we knew that there were several people that couldn't attend the conference due to visa issues or just because of the cost of attendance. And I felt incredibly blessed to have had that experience as I, you know, kind of like that day looked back on the last few days and the people I'd met and the workshops and things. So I kind of spoke about how, since we've had this opportunity, you know, we've been blessed to bless others. You know, there are some people out there that just don't have, they haven't had speech therapy, or maybe they haven't experienced self-help the like we have. So if we are to make a difference in the lives of the 1% of people in the world that stutter, then I think it starts with us taking back what we've learned. I think it starts with us advertising, and through that, through us stepping out of our comfort zone, I think, you know, that there are lots of people that are just waiting for someone else who stutters to, you know, speak up and to make that known, so that other people that are often covert, don't feel alone, and so that they can improve and so that they can reach their dreams.
That's one of the reasons that we started Stutter Talk, is we wanted to reach all people, but, you know, there's certainly some folks who don't come out to a support group or conference for whatever reason. And I mean, we just had somebody on air who told me that before ever going out to a support group, they were running around Prospect Park in Brooklyn listening to Stutter Talk on their headphones. And I just thought that was really cool. So I agree with you. We want to reach everybody, including those who can't make it out to a conference for whatever reason. I want to ask you this. So there has been some pushback in the stuttering community, or some concerns expressed that the National Stuttering Association or other self-help groups too might be too accommodating to speech language pathologists and to researchers. There's been concerns that the NSA has in its agenda that they're interested in a cure now. Do you share any of these concerns about speech language pathologists participating in self-help? And do you have any concerns about those who are interested in seeking a cure?
Well, you just kind of threw at me a hot topic and a loaded question.
You know what? I did. And the reason is, it just sort of popped into my head because, you know, I haven't been able to attend the conference in years because I have young children. And I really, really, really wanted to be there this summer because of these issues. So I'm just curious, from your perspective as a first timer, what you make of, or if it was a non-issue. I mean, because I don't know what the vibe was.
For me personally, I personally do have a bit of an issue with the large push for a cure, because I know that in my life there are, so many great but lessons that I've learned through dealing with such a stuttering and working to overcome it. I mean, I know with 100% certainty that I wouldn't be the man that I am today if I didn't have to work towards acceptance and the realization that I'm going to stutter for the rest of my life and there is no cure. But I know that not everyone shares those same sentiments, and because of that, I think that, we should use the resources and the great minds like Dr. Drano that came out and spoke, and I think that if people want to, move in that direction, that's totally fine. But I at the same time, for me personally, I don't think me wishing for a cure is gonna help, me get through my everyday life. I think that growing up, there was so much of a hesitance towards speaking. There were times when I didn't show up, when I didn't speak up, when I would let people order things for me, and I kind of felt like growing up, from time to time, I lost my personality because I was pursuing fluency, and I think in the same light, if I'm looking for a cure, which may or may not be a realistic goal, I don't think that that's going to help me work towards reaching my goals. So I don't know if we really in the self-help movement need to be discussing that. I think that scientists and SLPs and PhD, they can continue to do that great work. But my personal view is that that's, probably not the most practical and beneficial way to approach the day-to-day struggles that we deal with as people who stutter.
You had mentioned a moment ago that stuttering made you feel like you lost your personality, and I feel very similarly, and it seems the way that I would put it is that I'm not even sure I knew what my personality was until I started being open about stuttering. So I kind of think it like stunted or prevented my personality from really showing what it was. And I'm still not exactly sure. Like, I still might be compensating for the fact that I spent so many years avoiding stuttering. I still might be speaking up a little bit more than I need to, just because I spent so many years not doing so. It's hard to even know. It sounds like you found self-help through Vivian Siskin, a speech language pathologist. Did you, at the conference, did you ever feel like the professionals were in the way, or did you feel like they were a vibrant part of the community, or how would you say it?
Yeah, so I was overwhelmed by the friendliness and the I guess inclusivity that the 20-somethings group had. So I spent most of my time with, folks like Roisin and other leaders in that group. So I really didn't feel like the professionals were in the way as much as no, I just didn't think a lot of the workshops and the I guess conversations that they were having were as beneficial to me as the 20-somethings workshops and the workshops on vocating for yourself. Like, those sorts of workshops, I think, really made a difference. And I think that that's how it should be. I think that, people that want to kind of deal with the scientific, clinically, or clinically based, aspects of stuttering they can and they should, but we should have the freedom to choose how to approach stuttering and what we need to be discussing. So yeah, no, I don't think that they really got in the way for me.
One of the reasons I brought up this topic is not only because it's a hot issue in stuttering right now, although I think it's always kind of been an issue, but just this week, there's been a conversation on stuttering on a Facebook group from North Carolina that's very active, and it's a parent group. And so many times I see a public conversation about stuttering, and I feel like I have to jump in and repair it and fix it. And this time, I didn't feel like I had to do anything because the conversation was on such a good level. And there were some speech language pathologists in my area who I don't know, who I've never met, who were saying some really smart things and I think very productive and good things. And I didn't even comment. Like I didn't feel a need to have to jump in. And I don't ever remember having that feeling before about a public discussion on stuttering. So I don't know. It was really cool to see that. And I imagine it's because of the Stuttering Foundation and the National Stuttering Association and friends who reach out to speech language pathologists. I have to imagine that all of those decades of work, it's really starting to pay off. So that's one of the reasons I share all of this. This is Stutter Talk. Peter Wright is here with Marcus Peters, a systems analyst in Dallas, Texas. So your family is from Nigeria. Has that influenced anything about your stuttering or how you were raised to look at your stuttering or related issues?
I think that's a really good question. For me, I grew up with immigrant parents. My parents both actually went to school in England, and I was born there, but I moved to Texas at a very young age and grew up in the Dallas Metroplex. And because of that, I think, that you unique upbringing did strongly impact my experience as a person who stutters that I had growing up. Specifically growing up, my parents put me in private school. They would make sure that that I took those SAT prep courses, AP classes, and they would emphasize that I had unique opportunities in this country that far surpassed the opportunities that they had when they were in Europe. So those added pressures, I think, they had pros and cons. Pros, they, kind of instilled in me discipline and setting goals and achieving them. But I think the cons are that when I started to stutter at a very young age, my parents would, start to worry because, me being that I'm Nigerian and also Black, they didn't want people to, later on in life when I started to work, think less of me, maybe think that, because I stutter, I don't have as much to offer. I'm not as intelligent. And they just really wanted me to work to get my stuttering under control, which, led to me speaking slower, pausing more, and then, eventually getting to the point where I was a covert stutterer throughout high school. And then by the time I got to college, things got out of hand and sought some help.
It makes me wonder aloud if there was a way to research this in a good, productive manner, what covert stuttering statistics would look like across the world. I have no idea. I mean, I can't tell. It sounds like you might almost be saying that there is an experience perhaps in America, and I'm sure it's elsewhere too, that a lot is expected of children in some families, and that might bring pressure not to stutter. Is that the right way to say it, or is there a better way to say it?
I would very much agree with what you're saying. I think that my parents, you know, honestly did an excellent job raising me. I completely love them, and I owe a lot to them. And they did everything they could to make sure that I was getting the treatment that I needed. But I think if I wasn't sounding more fluent, and if they saw struggle at home, I think that's when they, you know, would start to kind of just give me advice on how to, I guess, slow down, and on how to not get nervous when I gave presentations and stuff like that. And that all kind of stemmed from the fact that I was the, you know, first out of my three siblings to go to college in this country. My parents were immigrants, and they, you know, just wanted me to do the family name proud, and to just, you know, achieve great things in a land of opportunity that we all have.
You mentioned a moment ago being a person of color. Just real quick, do you identify as Black or African American, or what's the term that you like?
Well, I definitely would say that I identify as all those things. I identify as Nigerian. I identify as Black, African American, a person of color. I think those are all titles that can kind of summarize my identity.
So as someone who's Black, as an African American, as a Nigerian American, is there anything about your skin color that relates to stuttering in some way?
Yes. I would say that one of the things that we explored at the conference was the fact that there are stigmas. There are, you know, what society doesn't understand, or oftentimes because a precedent has been kind of set, society, you know, says that things are always going to be this way. And I think that there are stigmas placed on people who stutter, labels. Then, you know, the same thing can be said for people of color. You know, we, especially right now with, you know, the unfortunate loss of lives that have been caused by law enforcement. And then on the flip side, the, you know, brutal killings of the police officers that we saw in Dallas. I think that you know, the media and I think that society at large often is fearful of what they don't understand. And if, you know, there are a few folks in a community that set a bad example, often more people than need to pay for it. And I think, you know, in my own life, I've been blessed to not grow up in a part of the country where prejudice and racism and, you know, systemic issues directly affect me. But unfortunately, there have been times when I've walked into a store and I've known that someone's, you know, looking at me a little bit more closely than they should, or I'm out on vacation and I see someone lower their head as I'm, you know, walking down an inner city street because they don't want me to rob them. These are things that haven't happened very often, but they have happened on an occasion. So I think that, you know, I often have to, you know, work to kind of prove people wrong as a person who stutters, and to prove people wrong as a person of color because of the stigmas that exist.
Wow, so much on the table. This is really great stuff. I dare say juicy stuff. And so the Stuttering Foundation of America, they recently launched an ID card for people who stutter. And the idea is that you carry it in your wallet, and if you're pulled over by the police or if you're at a border crossing, you can show a border guard. And it starts with, "I'm a person who stutters. Stuttering is a condition covered by the Americans with Disabilities Act." And then it asks the question, "What is stuttering?" And it goes on to discuss it. So I think the idea is you can give the card to people, like a police officer, to explain say, "I'm not drunk. I'm not being disrespectful. I'm not hiding anything from you. I'm a person who stutters." What do you think of such an ID card? Would you ever use it? What do you make of it?
Yeah, I think that this is an excellent idea. You know, just drawing from personal experience. When I was in college, there was this one time I was pulled over by a police officer because my license plate had expired, and I gave him a really cheap excuse. I said that I'm a broke college kid and I'm waiting for my next paycheck, and he, you know, kind of just gave me a sober warning, as he called it. And I think that he kind of interpreted that I may be lying to him, that I may be incredibly nervous, because I've heard that, you know, fluent people often stutter when they're nervous, when they're in giving public speeches and stuff. So I think in a situation where I'm just being pulled over by the cop and, you know, he might start to think things because, you know, I'm having a disfluent moment, I think it'd be nice to pull one of these things out. And then also I think that oftentimes people don't even think that stuttering exists. When I was in college, I told a pretty good friend that I was having lunch with that I stutter, and he said, "You know, I do it from time to time. It's probably just in your mind." And I had to tell him, you know, 3 or 4 times before he actually believed that stuttering is an actual issue, that it's a struggle shared by a lot of people around the world, and people pursue speech therapy in order to improve, you know, in terms of just communication and overcoming the challenges of language. So yeah, I think it kind of adds legitimacy to the struggle that we go through.
Yeah, it's can be very frustrating when someone gives you the old, "Oh no, I stutter too." And you're like, no, you don't. But yeah, it's making me think, because I was just driving home to speak with you, and I got stopped at a roadblock because there's a gas leak in my neighborhood, which has never happened. And there's a really nice police officer who was turning cars around, and I talked to him for a few minutes. And he said to me, "Oh, sir," he was so polite. He's like, "Sir, your car has not been inspected in a while." And I said, "Oh, no, it should be fine." He's like, "Sir, it hasn't been inspected in 11 months." And I'm like, "What?" Somehow I missed an inspection. So he was telling me he could have given me a ticket. I don't know, but he was very polite. And I when I got home, I was thinking, 20 years ago, I would have been so busy trying not to stutter that when he asked to see my registration, just to show me, because, you know, I kind of didn't believe him, because I couldn't believe my car hadn't been inspected in a year. So he's like, "Sure, I'll show you." So we were talking about it. And 20 years ago or 25 years ago, I would have been working so hard not to stutter that just as we're talking here, I kind of think, gee, I might have needed a covert stuttering card, you know, if I'm not making any sense, mister, it's because I'm trying not to stutter. So yeah, man, I would have had to allowed myself to stutter for that card to even work.
Yeah, and I think that that's actually a really good point. oftentimes people don't think we stutter because we're not doing it openly. You know, people might watch a film like The King's Speech. Well, I don't know if that's the best example, but they might see, you know, let's just say, you know, for the sake of this discussion, they might see Porky Pig and hear, you know, kind of an overt and open stutter, and they think that anyone who actually struggles with their speech sounds like that. But the truth is that we all have different speech patterns, and I got to experience that in its full while I was at the conference. And people that choose not to show any stuttering, that's still stuttering. They're stuttering all the time. You know, we just can't see that. So, yeah, I think even a covert card would, you know, a lot of people would truly benefit from that.
Hmm. Well said. This is Stutter Talk. Peter Wrights is here with Marcus Peters, who is a person who stutters and a member of the famous Dallas chapter of the National Stuttering Association. We've been talking a lot about your experiences with the National Stuttering Association. So for those who want to check out that fine group, they can go to westutter.org. WeStutter.org. I want to ask you a little bit more about the conference you attended this summer. So you attended a workshop titled Stuttering, Disordered, or Different. And I know that you really liked that workshop, or I think you might have found it challenging, but you really got something from it. Can you tell us about it? And do you remember who were the leaders of that workshop?
Yeah, interestingly enough, Roisin McManus was one of the leaders in that workshop, and I really got a lot out of that because I got to see diverse perspectives, you know, coming firsthand from different people that are all working towards the same goal. I would say most of the people that I met were people who were, working towards more forward moving speech. And I think that the strategies for achieving that can vary. But I think, you know, I don't want to speak on behalf of everything, but I think a lot of us have the same goal. And but the perspectives on how to describe stuttering and what language to use when talking about stuttering, I think varied, you know, pretty vastly. So that was one thing that struck me. And, you know, there was the idea is that when we talk about stuttering, should we use the term disorder or should we use the term difference? And, you know, it seemed to me like a large I don't want to say there was a 50-50 split, but you know, a large percentage of the people in the room of, let's say, maybe like 90 people thought that stuttering should always be considered a disorder. And, you know, I kind of fall on the other side of the fence where I kind of see it as a difference. So that that was something that I think really stood out to me.
Can you take a moment on that? Like, what is it about stuttering that you prefer seeing it as a difference and not a disorder?
Yeah, I think that for me, I'm constantly working to redefine the way I see stuttering for myself, and I'm working to redefine the way that the world looks at stuttering. And, you know, Roisin made a good point that society has stigmatized stuttering, and then even in the academic world and the professional world, there is this this idea that stuttering is a problem that needs to be fixed. You know, people are broken and they need to be repaired. And I think when we use terms like pathology, in terms like disorder and different terms, my And interpretation is you're talking about, you know, something that is broken that needs to be fixed. And if I'm working towards acceptance and embracing stuttering and taking forth with me the stuttering pride that I gained from the conference, then I'm going to use words like difference and uniqueness and different things like that, that I guess kind of challenge the ways that society looks at stuttering, the way that society treats people who stutter, and you know, so that we can, I think, have the respect and the understanding that I think we all want within the world each day.
I love the flavor and the empowerment of what you're talking about. There's so much to say about this, but let me just tip at it just a little bit. So I'm going to share something, and I'd love to get your feedback on it. So again, the flavor of what you just said is wonderful, but there's this perspective too, where let's say a parent's concerned and a school is concerned because a child is having trouble reading, and they're in the third grade and they're reading at a first grade or kindergarten level. Well, that child, you know, if they're identified as having a learning disorder or disability, they're going to receive services to help them. But if they just have a learning difference, then they're not going to qualify for help. And it's the same with stuttering. So when you have a disorder that gets in the way of academically achieving, whether it's because you don't raise your hand in class or because you can't get the words out, you qualify for help. But when you just have a difference, that's not going to qualify you, at least right now, for help. So does that conversation concern you? Do you see them as sort of different issues, or what are your thoughts on it?
I think that you raise a good point. I guess if, you know, clinically we use the term disorder. Let me take a different route. For the child, you know, let's say that child makes it to high school and they're still in speech therapy at that point in time, and they take a look at their ITP, and then they look at their current performance, and they see that things haven't changed very much in the last 10 years, and they really feel that they have a speech disorder. When that child starts to talk to other people about their issue, when they start using this term, I think it kind of reinforces the negatives of the struggle that that they're going through. And for me, acceptance and that kind of change of the perspective that really took me, you know, I'd say, you know, a good 18 years of my life to get to that point. I think if that child's ever gonna, you know, if a switch is gonna go off and they're gonna accept that, hey, you know, I have a struggle, but hey, if I accept this, if I own this, if I kind of take the role as a person who stutters, things can get better. And there are people with far worse disorders, people struggling much more than me. So I believe that I can make it, I can overcome this hurdle, and I can get better. I think that's kind of the perspective that I'm coming from. If the SLP wants to use that term, I think that's fine, because it makes the case for the issue that, you know, needs to be dealt with. But for the actual individual that's having these mental battles each day, that, you know, doesn't show up, that, you know, may not think as highly of themselves as they should. I think that you know, then they're not you know, kind of being they're not I guess overlooking the issue by saying it's a difference. But I think if you want to have change, I think a positive outlook and a change of perspective is, you know, one of the best steps that you can take on the road to recovery.
Yeah, I think you really said that well, and your thoughts really illustrate how complicated this is. I mean, just this week, I had three parents call me for speech therapy for their children, and I think the children's ages were young. Two of the children were probably 4 or 5, and then one of the children were 15. And all three parents, they were lovely mothers, and all three parents said the same phrase, you know, this is a good time to fix this issue. They all said the fix word. And I'm not going to do the rapid fire back, well, we can't fix them because they're not broken, because I'm sure these parents would also agree with that. But it does sort of pain me a little bit when I hear somebody say, this is a good time to fix my child. And I'm not sure what to do with it, because I'm not so sure that they would ever say that in front of a child. And, you know, the parent would be the very first one to protect and defend their child. So I'm not really sure what to do with that. I'm just going to sort of hold it and think about it. But it is striking to me that 3 out of 3 parents on the phone this week all use the phrase, this is a good time to fix it. So I love this topic of language and stuttering. Let's continue this for a moment. So on the Stutter Talk Facebook group this week, there's been a really great conversation about the word acceptance. And I sort of brought that up on Facebook because I use the word acceptance all the time. And I'm starting to think that the word is a lot like fluency, where every time we say fluency and every time we say acceptance, the next thought should be, well, what do you mean by fluency? What do you mean by acceptance? So I'm going to try to do a better job of challenging myself and others about what do you mean by acceptance? So take it where you will. Like, what words inspire you to change, or what words inspire you to feel strong about your stuttering? I mean, acceptance, empowerment, pride, playful stuttering, proud stuttering, take it where you will.
Yeah. So if I look back to my time with Vivian Siskin, I think she had a wide range of terms and, you know, a large vocabulary that she used to, I guess, kind of get us on board and to challenge us as we went out into the real world each week and sought to improve. And I think when I got to a place where I was at this camp one summer, and, you know, I was standing in front of 50 people that were out there with me, and I said, hi, my name is Marcus Peters, and I'm a person who stutters. If you ever hear me pause or have a break in my speech, it's because I'm stuttering. When I got to the point where I could say that, I believe that was one of the moments where I felt like I had I had gotten to a comfortable level of acceptance. And there's a phrase that she used, it's taking the role of a person who stutters. And I think that's kind of a unique phrase to use, because, I mean, it kind of sounds like stuttering is a job description more than a part of your identity. But I think that for me, as I was setting goals each week and as I was working to achieve those, I would say, how can I take the role of a person who stutters when I go out to dinner with friends? How can I take the role by, showing up to a hang out after class, as opposed to staying home because I've had an incredibly difficult time speaking today and I'm just fed up with how speech has gone this week? How can I take the role of a person who stutters? And I think by taking that role, you're challenging yourself and you're working on overcoming the embarrassment and the shame that we often feel. So I really like that word, and I see it as a synonym to acceptance.
Wow. So you just named this episode. It is no longer the Two Peters edition. It is now taking the role of a person who stutters. that's going to be the title, and we're going to credit that to Vivian Siskin, right?
We sure will.
So let me ask you this. You have described stuttering as a blessing. Is that similar to stuttering being a gift, or is it different to you?
That's a really good question. And I've heard several people on Stutter Talk talk about stuttering as a gift. And then several people also at the conference say that. And I guess for me, if I want to think practically, if it's Christmas or it's my birthday, you know, I give and I receive gifts. I don't give and I receive. I don't receive blessings unless I'm. I'd say that's really the main difference that I see between those two words. If I look at my own life, and the challenges that I've overcome, and I start to kind of share what I've learned with others, I can start to kind of empower and inspire others the way people like Vivian and just other people in the stuttering community have done. And that's what I actually got to do last summer. There was a friend, you know, I'm not going to mention his name because I didn't ask for his permission. But there was a friend last summer who was really struggling with his speech. And through a mutual friend at my church, I was put in contact with this young man. We spent the entire summer pretty much talking about the daily struggles that he has as a college student, you know, not being able to introduce his name on the first day of school, just feeling like he has run a marathon at the end of the day. And I talked about how by changing your perspective and how by asking questions like, what if you look at stuttering as a good thing? You've thought of stuttering your entire life as a bad thing. Your family has reinforced that, the school has reinforced that, society has reinforced that. But what if you challenged that and you began to look at stuttering as a good thing? Now, you know, obviously you're still struggling each day, and there are ways to kind of reduce that struggle through voluntary stuttering, through advertising thing, you know, but I think the biggest thing for him was a perspective change. And I was able to sit with him, talk with him, pray with him, and to just listen to him. Like, you know, a lot of people, you know, have time pressure, but, you know, I think by doing that, I kind of got to informally mentor him. And in that way, I started to see the struggle that I have gone through as a blessing. So that's, you know, it's taken me a long time to kind of grasp that concept and to get there. But last summer, I really started to say, you know what? Life could be far worse. It's not that bad. And because of what I've gone through, I'm able to help others find their voice.
That is very powerful. It is really, it's great to give back. And I'm so glad that folks like you are out there helping others. I mean, it's pretty amazing how quick we can go from needing help to giving help. Do you ever sort of get amazed by where you were and where you are?
Yeah, I mean, you know, before this interview, I went back and looked at some of the progress reports. I don't I don't know exactly what they're called because I'm not an SLP, but the different, you know, kind of summaries of the client's, you know, current performance and where you want them to get to. And when I started with Vivian, I mean, I can honestly say that I had an intense level for shame, a low tolerance for stuttering. I believed that by stuttering, people would, you know, interpret me as someone unintelligent, someone who, you know, has a low level of self-esteem, all these negatives. But over time, that's completely switched. So it's pretty remarkable how we can change and how we can grow when we, you know, start to hope and when we start to look at things from a different perspective.
Well said. Do you have time for two last questions?
Sure.
Stutter Talk here with Marcus Peters, joining us via Skype from Dallas, Texas. I am, of course, in Carrboro, North Carolina. Let's say there's somebody listening who stutters at home. Well, we know they are. But let's say there's somebody who's listening who's in a very bad place where they're stuttering. They're in a stuttering hole. They don't know what their future is going to look like. They haven't reached out for stuttering help, or maybe they have and haven't gotten the help they want. What words might you say to this general person?
What I would say is that there is hope, and that you can reach your goals. I think one of the things with stuttering is that we often think that because we stutter, there are so many different opportunities in life that we're going to have to pass up, that we're not going to be able to achieve our dreams, that we're going to, you know, I think when you kind of take that, you know, step of faith and you put yourself out there and you kind of accept the fact that you have a problem that you need to work through, you would be surprised the number of people that have been there that are willing to help and to support you. So I would say take a step of faith and join the NSA. And if you don't have a chapter nearby, maybe start listening to Stutter Talk to hear people like me stutter openly each day. And then things like Stutter Social are really great ways for people to as well just kind of be heard and to be understood and to kind of explore the struggle that they have with other people. Because the worst thing you can do as a person who stutters, which we've all done at some point in our life, is be alone, and in times when I've been alone, I've grown the least in my confidence and my acceptance, and that's obviously not where we want to see each other.
Yeah, it's amazing how much growth can happen when we're with others, fighting similar challenges and enjoying the battle and enjoying the rewards and the successes and the joys of it all. And I'll just add to what you just said, that just like the National Stuttering Association at WeStutter.org, there's also great groups like Friends Who Stutter.org, Say, the Stuttering Association for the Young, Say.org, of course, the Stuttering Foundation, stutteringhelp.org. They're giants over there in stuttering. There's a lot of great groups that help us people who stutter and help the professionals who work with us. So,
and then there's actually just one more thing that wanted to add on. Thanks. I I would say one of the best things that a person who stutters can do, which you know, I'm shocked I didn't do until I got to college, is tell someone that you are struggling and that you stutter. It's interesting because I've spoken recently to some really close friends, people that you know I've known my entire life, and I've asked them, did you see me struggle with my speech growing up? And they all said yes. And then I asked, did we ever talk about it? They said no. So people that truly love me and that, you know, want to see me succeed. Growing up, I talked to none of them about the issue that was eating my lunch every single day. So I would say, you know, a great start is if you're not ready to step out and to join the NSA, talk to someone that that you know and that you trust, so that you can begin to just feel like you're heard and you're understood. Because you know, feeling like you don't have a voice is, you know, a struggle that I've been through, that a lot of us go through, that I don't think that we should.
Yeah, very well said. And I can't speak for every stuttering community, although I imagine we're very similar. But when I was in New York City at our Manhattan chapter, we had people who would reach out to first timers. So let's say a first timer contacted us and said, you know, I'd like to go, but I've never been to a meeting. We might say, oh, well, we'll meet you across the street at a coffee shop. So Jeff or Peter or Michael or somebody will meet you and talk to you so that when you go in, you know somebody. Or if it was a woman calling, we'd often have a woman who could meet the person and for coffee and say, hey, just so you know, a face, when you go in there, you have a friend, you have an ally. And it just seems that where there are stutterers, there are people who care about you. And my experience in the stuttering world has been phenomenal. So I don't know where I would be without my stuttering friends. Let me ask you one last question, Marcus Peters. Is there anything you're working on now, a goal that you'd want to share with us?
A goal. When I left the NSA, the national conference, I don't intend on leaving the NSA anytime soon.
Right.
But when I left the conference, I had this overwhelming sense of stuttering pride that I had never had before. I think prior to it, I was at a relatively decent level of acceptance, but I didn't take pride in the fact that I stuttered. And I think that there's a difference. You know, I mean, if you're passionate about something and you take pride in it, you're going to tell other people about it. And I did advertise when I started my job because, you know, a very good role model in our chapter, who I'm going to shout out, Russ Hicks, he gave me the and encouragement and advice to advertise to as many people as I could during the first week, and that paid dividends. But I've been at my current job for almost a year now, and I've gotten to the point where I don't talk about stuttering very much. So currently, I've gone in, I've talked to my manager about stuttering and how she is to interact with me if she ever sees me struggle. I've talked to my director, and she's also been very understanding, and a few friends in the office. But I think advertising is something that I need to be consistently doing. You know, right now it's something that I'm trying to do once a day. But you know, going forward, if I'm not doing that, maybe let's say once or twice a week, I think I'm really missing out on the opportunity to change the way the world thinks about stuttering. I mean, I stutter, but I'm adding value in the office place. I mean, you look at someone like Roisin, who's an ER nurse. You know, I've often heard it say that people who stutter, you know, they maybe should avoid high stress and I guess you know, high pressured communication. But you know, someone like that, who's thriving, who's proving that she can add value, who's proving that she's very intelligent and that she's up for the challenge of working in the ER, and she's advertising there, you know, I definitely appreciate and look up to people like that. So I've tried to bring that back home, and it's not always easy, because some people just don't want to talk about it. I understand that it makes, you know, some people uncomfortable, but you know, I try to advertise for myself, and that's something that I'm trying to do more.
Someone asked me once if I was ever going to get tired of doing stutter talk, and like, nope, not tired of talking about stuttering yet. still need to do it. So that, I wish I wouldn't have asked you that last question though, because now I have a challenge. So what do I title this episode? Taking the role of a person who stutters, or I stutter and I add value? I mean, you're going to drop that on me? That's big. That I stutter and I add value. That's beautiful, man. And you know, you've name dropped some royalty here: Roisin, Russ Hicks. Now Lee Reeves is in your Dallas chapter, right?
Yeah, he and his wife Nina come out occasionally. You know, they'll make a special guest appearance every once in a while. But until I made it out to the national conference, I had no idea that he was a professional auctioneer at one point in time.
Oh yeah. Wow. Yeah, he certainly was. And, wow, you've surrounded yourself with some good stuttering folk. So that's really cool. Well, I want to thank you, Marcus Peters, for joining us today and for giving so much back to the stuttering community. It's, really great to know that you're out there doing this work. Again, I'm happy for our community when a first timer at the NSA can already be giving back. So hats off to you, and hope you can come back on air sometime.
Thank you for your time, Peter.